We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of Arizona Wildcats football. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment, or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, they have the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glenn and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. I'm Justin Spears here with Michael Lev, and we are at, or not at Arizona Stadium, we were over at McHale Center recording this podcast, but we just left Kevin Sumlin's weekly press conference. Before we talk some U of A football, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't need a subscription to the Arizona Daily Star. You can get it on the App Store and Google Play. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts. And make sure you follow the Wildcaster on all social media platforms, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Lev, so Arizona, they're now 1-1 after beating NAU 65-41. And now they're playing their first Power 5 opponent of the season. They got Texas Tech coming to town. But looking back at the tape, every Sunday you sit down, you watch the game film. What did you take away from Arizona's win over NAU and things going forward this week when they play Texas Tech?
I think the biggest positive from that game, from a just sort of a personnel, you know, which unit looked the best standpoint, offensive line, outstanding. So many different guys I thought played way better than against Hawaii. I think giving them a chance to get the run game going really helped. We talked about that a lot after Hawaii. They didn't run enough. They ran almost, you know, I think about twice as many times against NAU. It was obviously that type of game, but I saw a lot more pulling of the guards and tackles than I did against Hawaii, which, you know, if you got good athletes at those positions, that's probably a good idea. Donovan Lai, I think, is a pretty darn good athlete for someone who's 6'5", 6'6", and 315 pounds. And Robert Conzo looked good doing that. I thought Peyton Fears looked comfortable doing that as opposed to being in a pass set and having to, you know, stop a speedy edge rusher. Whether they do the same things against Texas Tech remains to be seen. I think we addressed a little bit after the game the other night the need for kind of a ball control type of offense to give your defense a break in what, you know, could be, you know, a track meet type of game. I think both coaches today referred to this game as having that potential. So that was my biggest kind of positive takeaway. Thing everybody wanted to talk about, of course, is like what happened in the second half. Like, why were they so bad?
Sloppy
penalties, all those things. Kevin Sumlin said it during the presser. A lot of guys were out there who had never played before. Colin Schooler didn't play the entire second half. There were communication issues. There were guys who were blowing assignments by, you know, jumping out of their gaps. You know, he was referring to Keon Bars. He said he's going to be a great player here, but he's got a lot of inexperience, and he was, you know, yeah, assignment-wise, maybe wasn't executing the way he was supposed to. So the hope is that those guys learn from those experiences and they're better in the future. The other benefit, I think, of playing those guys in that situation is you get a feel for who's ready and who's not. And the coaches can make those assessments and make those decisions moving on here. It's a great aspect of the redshirt rule. That you can throw guys into a game, a real game situation, and see if they're ready for it.
Now, with this opponent in Texas Tech, I think one of the big things that I took away from Kevin Sumlin in his press conference was they got to get off the field on third down. You have to get your offense on the field. You got to get your defense off the field, because there's no denying what's Arizona's biggest crutch right now is defense, right?
In general,
you know,
sure.
You know, you give up over 400 yards and 41 points to NAU. No, again, once again, no offense to NAU, but you're an FCS opponent. You're Arizona. You play in the Pac-12. You're a Power 5 team. You should be steamrolling NAU. And they did in the first half. At least that's the way it looked like. And then NEU comes out, you know, they put points on the board and they have 41 points at the end of the day. Now with Texas Tech, they're a much better team than NEU. I think Texas Tech is a better team than Hawaii. And I was looking back at, you know, time of possessions in, especially in the first half, Arizona's offense, you know, they were scoring in a minute, minute five, a minute and a half. So your defense is always on the field. And I think with the running backs, utilizing five of them, getting J.J. Taylor, his 100 yards, utilizing two running backs at almost every play, I think it's going to slow down the tempo for Arizona. The offense is going to get on the stay on the field a little bit longer and give the defense a break. And I think they need a break against a team like Texas Tech.
We're not asking the Arizona defense to be great, I don't think, in order for them to win a game like this one coming up or for them to have a good year this year. We only need them to be
give yourself a break.
Decent.
Just give yourself a break on third down.
Decent. You know, you don't have to – in a game like this, two or three plays, two or three stops in third down situations might be the difference. Because we're going to assume, I think, moving forward here, that the offense is going to be among the best in the conference, maybe even among the best in the nation if everything clicks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of weapons. I don't think the receivers are as big of an issue as people thought coming into the season. Khalil Tate looks healthy. He's moving extremely well. You've got tons of running backs that you can go to who can do all sorts of different things. So what does the defense need to do? A couple third down stops here and there, a turnover here and here or here and there could make all the difference in a game that we think is going to be one of those, you know, Big 12 shootout type of contest.
Well, you look at, you know, how many rushing yards they gave up to NAU. Yeah, they gave up 442 total yards, but you look at rushing wise, only 69 yards rushing.
Yeah.
The rest was all through the air. Texas Tech,
they're
going to be throwing the ball a lot.
Yeah, they are. We're going to go with Bowman for the pronunciation of their quarterback's last name instead of Bowman, right?
Bowman.
We're going to go with Alan Bowman.
Alan Bowman.
Sort of lightly recruited, coming out of, I think, Grapevine, Texas. Kind of similar in a way to Keaton Slovis, like three-star prospect. Really only had one, quote-unquote, big offer. And really good right away. Set all kinds of records as a freshman last year at Tech under Cliff Kingsbury. New coaching staff comes in under Matt Wells. He's picked up right where he left off, completing over 70% of his passes so far this season, through for, I think, 436 in week one against Montana State. Not quite as many yards this last week, but still a big-time quarterback. I'm looking at his offers here, Justin. Arkansas State, Cincinnati, Columbia, Dartmouth.
Smart guy,
you know, like probably, must be pretty smart, but kind of, you know, under the radar. And Texas Tech obviously saw something in him, and he's done really well. He mentioned Kevin Sumlin, that has mentioned that they have a 6'6" wide receiver in TJ Vasher, who's
big
their
guy.
Number one guy. I mean, there's obviously no one in the U of A secondary who's 6'6". You know, Jace Whitaker's played extremely well this year. He's 5'10", 5'11". You know, Lorenzo Burns is similar size. I think size-wise, Christian Roland Wallace is probably the best matchup for him, but I don't know if you want to do that with a player who's still kind of figuring it out. You know, you saw the good and the bad from CRW in that game the other night. I mean, as someone said in his presser, you know, on that touchdown early in the game, he's like sort of gave up on the play, and you're like, what are you doing out there? You know, this is – just because you committed pass interference earlier in the play doesn't mean that it's over. And then he comes back later and basically makes the same play that Jace Whitaker made against Hawaii. Comes off of his guy, recognizes what's happening, and intercepts a pass intended for a receiver that another DB was covering. You know, really heady play, right? Like, so you see a lot of potential in a lot of these young players. It's the question is, like, when do they get there? You know, when are they at the point where they're consistent and productive college players? And it might not be this week.
Who would you rather be at this point, Michael Ev? Texas Tech or Arizona going into this week? Because we talked about this walking over here. On one end, you know, Texas Tech 2-0. They played Montana State, UTEP. But they beat them pretty handily.
They did.
I mean, they only gave up 3 points to UTEP. 10 points to Montana State. And then you look at Arizona, 1-1. Coming off a win against NEU, while it was sloppy in the second half, you still took care of business, and then lost to Hawaii. On paper, you look at the records and say, well, you know, I'd much rather be Texas Tech, but at the end of the day, Arizona might have more talent at this point. I don't know. It's really hard to assess both teams.
We don't know. We really don't. And I mentioned this at the very end of my five takeaways. You know, that's up on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster app right now. And that's, we don't know really how good this Arizona team is, and we probably aren't going to find out until Saturday night. And I think you can say the same thing about Texas Tech.
Yeah.
You know, all due respect to Montana State and UTEP. I mean, that's an FCS program and one of the, probably the bottom five, you know, worst programs in FBS in UTEP. But if, and this is the point I was making as we were walking over here, if you're a fan, you know, which defense would you rather have right now? Would you rather have the one that just gave up 41 points against NAU and has given up 40 or more points in four straight games dating the last season? Or would you rather have Texas Tech's defense, which has given up 13 points in two games and has given up 420 total yards in two games?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like right around – I think that's lower than Arizona's average for the first two. It's way lower, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, their average is over 500. So – total yards in two games less than Arizona's average for two games. Think about that. Which defense
That's
would
nuts.
You rather be? So we don't know how bad those opponents are, but I'd still rather be in Texas Tech's shoes, at least defensively, based on what we've seen so far.
What's the connection between Tucson and Texas Tech? Is there a unique connection between the two?
Well, it's one of the closest Division I programs to here, right? Which is why oftentimes, like in baseball, if Arizona's an at-large team, they'll get sent, and they're not hosting, they'll get sent to Lubbock because they're usually really good in baseball. I guess that's one. Their coach, Matt Wells, was the coach at Utah State and coached in this stadium a couple years ago. In the Arizona Bowl against New Mexico State, and his Aggies were the unwitting victims of what one of our colleagues, Brian Peterson, described as the greatest moment in, you know, New Mexico State football history, walk-off win in the Arizona Bowl. But then, you know, I think they went 6-7 that year, and I think they were 11-2 a year ago, Utah State, which obviously put Matt Wells in a position where he was a very attractive candidate. Tabbed as the successor to Cliff Kingsbury, who was fired and then somehow became the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals.
Somehow.
It's weird how weird how life works that way.
Keyword somehow.
But yeah, those are a couple connections. Unless you had something else.
No, that was exactly. Yeah, that was, I was trying to tee you up. I go left with the Matt Wells one.
Nice job.
So looking at the Pac-12 schedule.
Yeah.
My biggest takeaway from the conference was Colorado's coming. Voted to
finish
last in the Pac-12, and now they're 2-0.
I told you
on the season.
I picked them to finish last too, which was probably stupid on my part.
I knew there was going to be a good game against Nebraska, but Mel Tucker getting gutsy on their 4-yard line, doing a flea flicker for a 96-yard touchdown. That's awesome.
I love it. I love it when you can use the word bold to describe the play-calling decisions that
there's
are made
a lot of things you could call
by a coach. I mean, you know, if they had fumbled the ball or whatever, people would have been all over them. But I like just the mindset that they had. And they were down big in that game. And they came back. And I think I had mentioned previously that I saw some parallels between that team and last year's ASU team in that they have a star wide receiver, they have a senior quarterback, and they have a defensive-oriented coach with an NFL background. This team might actually be a little bit more explosive than that one. They don't necessarily have the bell cow running back, you know, that ASU had in you know, Benjamin a year ago. But we've talked about this. You know, the Pac-12 South is kind of a jumble. It's there for the taking. Now, maybe USC is a bigger contender than we thought because they may have discovered a quarterback. Who obviously had a great game against Stanford the other night. Also, their athletic director just resigned about 5 minutes ago. So
Lynn
there's
Swan.
There's still a degree of chaos over
hold on,
at SC. Yeah,
you formerly covering USC.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts on Lynn Swan?
Yeah,
apparently stepping down. As
yeah, well,
director.
People questioned the decision to hire him in the first place because he didn't have any experience as an athletic director.
He was a name.
He was a name. He had experience as a governor of a state of Pennsylvania. So obviously he had been in a leadership position before. One could argue that maybe being the athletic director at USC is a harder job than, you know, being the governor of Pennsylvania. So I think it was inevitable that a change was going to be made there. The question is USC going to do another USC type thing and bring in a big name guy who maybe doesn't fit the doesn't have the resume but has some sort of connection to the past, who's a Trojan for life or whatever, a part of the member of the Trojan family. Sorry, that's the phrase mm-hmm. that they use. Are they going to bring in a member of the Trojan family, or are they going to bring in the best qualified candidate who maybe isn't a member of the Trojan family, And then is that person going to finally, bring some solidity, some calm to what's been a very turbulent time for USC athletics? That's the question.
Well, how can USC get back to being USC?
When?
I mean, it really starts with their football program, right? Yeah. Things are going well at USC when their football team is doing great.
Well, so here's the thing. Is it good for the long run if they have a really good year this year? If Slovis is like Sam Darnold and elevates the entire program and they win the Pac-12 South and go to the Rose Bowl, Clay Helton's not going to be fired.
No.
I think there are a lot of USC fans who would probably prefer, they wouldn't probably verbalize it quite this way, but they'd probably prefer that they go 7-5
it's
or
like
6-6.
So,
yeah.
So
they can get someone in there who they really want.
Yeah.
Like the guy who's doing pregame for Fox right now. Former coach at Ohio State.
Oh, yeah. Urban Meyer, huh?
Urban Meyer, yeah. Although he's so good on TV that it would be kind of a shame.
Yeah.
I truly believe that he had a legit medical condition. Like, he looked like, at times last year, toward the end of the season, yeah, he was going to pass out on the sideline. So I'm not sure he's ever coming back, but, those rumors aren't going to die down, especially with him doing a pregame show in Los Angeles every Saturday. But anyway.
But looking at, the state of the Pac-12, yeah. We talked about Colorado, we talked about USC, UCLA losing to San Diego State 23-14 in front of what looked to be maybe 100 fans at the Rose Bowl. I mean, there was nobody there at the game. And, UCLA, in order to be successful, in order to have, fans come to your games and, create some buzz, you got to win some football games. And when you lose to Cincinnati, when you lose to San Diego State, I mean, it's really tough, to gain any sort of buzz, especially in a city like Los Angeles.
How about the schedule coming up? Home against Oklahoma.
Oh,
huge underdog
that's
against the top 5 team in the country.
That's a loss.
Then they got to go to Washington State.
That's a loss.
At a, play a 7:30 game before coming here. So you're looking at the possibility, I'd say strong possibility, of UCLA being 0-4 and really kind of beaten up physically, confidence-wise, coming into that first game or that game here in Tucson, and Arizona will be coming off a bye. That's sort of, talk about teeing it up. I mean, that's teed up for the Wildcats right there.
Yeah.
To beat the Bruins. It's also like a revenge game after they lost by a point last year. So a long way off. We're still in Texas Tech week, but looking ahead, things are not looking good
for
UCLA right now.
And Chip Kelly.
Do they have their quarterback? Is he on the roster?
DTR?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
When you say their quarterback, you talk about the quarterback
Chip
of
Kelly
the future?
Does he have his
guy?
Does he have the quarterback who can run his offense and make it look like something like what it looked like at Oregon?
And I
don't know.
And I was really surprised by 5-star quarterback DJ Uiagalelei.
Yeah.
He's going to Clemson next year. He's going to probably redshirt because Trevor Lawrence is still there. I thought Chip Kelly was going to put all the chips on the table for a guy like that because he plays at St. John Bosco. He's an L.A. guy. He can step in right away, and he is the guy for as long as he's there.
Kids do not make that decision when they first commit to a school. They don't look at it as, where can I go and play? What's the cool school? What's the great coach? What's the hot program? It's only after they lose the job that they look around and try to figure out, where can I transfer and get on the field? We saw that with the kid why am I forgetting names right now? Fields. What's his first name? The kid from Georgia who's playing for Ohio State.
Oh, Justin Fields.
Justin Fields, yeah. Your name. We saw that with Justin Fields. We've seen that in a lot of cases with quarterbacks where it's sort of like, why did you go to Georgia in the first place when you knew that Jake Fromm was there already and he was only a sophomore last year? He finds another home. I don't think that's going to happen with DJ. He's probably just going to sit out the 1 year, play a little bit, and then, become Clemson's starting quarterback. But if you're sitting down and you're deciding between Clemson and UCLA, I mean, which program is producing NFL players? Which program has the hot coach? Which program is in the college football playoff? It ain't UCLA. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's unfortunately it's not Arizona either.
Yeah.
Which is why they're not like in those conversations for those types of players either.
Well, I think in the past, West Coast kids were hesitant to go to programs like Clemson or even in the SEC. And now you have Tua Tagovailoa being a West Coast guy, even though he's from Hawaii.
Sure.
He's still a West Coast guy.
That player,
he's doing it out in the SEC. And his performance so far through the last couple of years, it's showing recruits on the West Coast, man, if Tua can do it, I can go out on the West Coast and be on the biggest stage in college football.
A player with his profile, I feel like 10 years ago, would have gone to USC 100% of the time.
Oh, absolutely.
Hawaiian kid, Polynesian, quarterback that maybe, you know, everybody's completely aware of him, you know, here on the mainland, that USC would have locked that down and he would have been their guy. But things have shifted. You know, things have really shifted toward the Southeast. Clemson used to be the butt of jokes 10 years ago, like for choking, right?
It was,
they were Clemsoning, Clemsoning things away. You didn't even bring up the Cal Washington result, which I think my tweet after the game kind of summed it up. Great win for Cal, bad loss for the Pac-12. Agreed?
Yes, because Washington was one of the teams that a lot of people thought could represent the Pac-12 in the college football playoff, or at least get to the Rose Bowl and win the Pac-12 overall. And who's to blame for this loss? Mother Nature? Lightning?
Justin Wilcox.
The lights?
Great coaching job.
But yeah, it's a bad look for the Pac-12. I agree, Michael.
It is. And Cal just kind of out Washington. I mean, they beat him up at the line of scrimmage. They rushed for 192 yards.
Yeah.
Against Washington. At Husky Stadium. You know, their quarterback, Chase Garbers, he only threw 18 passes in that game for 111 yards. Did not turn the ball over. That was a huge problem for Cal last year. I mean, turnovers were just killing them. And that's the kind of game that that Cal has to play in order to win, right? They're not an incredibly explosive offense, but if they can get you into a down-and-dirty game, a game in the mud, you know, if there had grass up at Husky Stadium, I'm sure there would have been mud with all the rain that was falling down. But that's the kind of game that they want to get you in. And if they can ugly it up, they've got a really good shot. Really bad look for the Pack in the sense that Washington, are they eliminated? Are they out? Can they recover from this?
No, they
can't. Can you lose a game at home against Cal and make the playoff?
No, I don't think you
probably
can.
Probably not.
I don't think you can. If you're an ASU fan, are you worried right now? Beating Sacramento State 19-7 at home.
It was a 12-7 game in the fourth quarter. I'd say like a little bit because you know if you want to look at 65-41 being a bad outcome against an FCS opponent, like what is 19-7? You know that seems like it's way worse. Sacramento State, I believe, was 2-10 last year. So you know you're not exactly talking about a juggernaut of an FCS opponent either. Maybe they're vastly improved than they've been. But you know, reading up on the game, seemed like there was a lot of like weird things that happened. You know, like turnovers in the red zone and fumbles, and you know they have a freshman center who's playing, which is going to kind of lead to its own set of problems. They were 2-8 last year.
Wow.
State, by the way,
that's brutal.
And they had one game canceled against NAU. I don't know why that was. And they got blown out by UC Davis in their last game, 56-13. Maybe UC Davis is really good. Maybe that's the transitive property team, because they played really competitively against Cal, which just beat Washington. And then,
so you're saying we should extend the Pac-12 to 14 teams
and bring in UC Davis
and Hawaii
because
apparently they're.
I don't
really
think
good
anyone. Hawaii is the best team in the Pac-12. No one wants to travel there though. But yeah, I'd be a little worried, but you know what? I would have also expected there to be some speed bumps with a freshman quarterback, a freshman center, N'Keal Harry not being there anymore. You know, that stuff's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen. They won the game, but now they got to go to Michigan State. And Michigan State, I believe, has the best run defense in the country. Arizona State has struggled to run the ball. Herm Edwards is going to be really stubborn about it. So we'll see how that turns out for ASU. I don't like their chances in that game.
Interesting week for the Pac-12 this upcoming week. Washington State, they're going to Houston, which will be on ESPN. That's going to be a fun one. That's a Friday night game too.
I just put the Washington State Cougars back in my top 25. Probably should have had them there all along, but I feel like that's upset alert right there. Short week. Houston's got a really good offense. They're away from the friendly confines of the Palouse. I'm putting the Pac-12 Cougars on upset alert for that one.
Then Air Force, Colorado, in-state matchup.
Another tough team to play, and maybe a bit of a letdown for Colorado after an incredibly emotional comeback against rival Nebraska. That's another one. I don't know what the spread is, Justin, but I would probably take the points in that one.
Stanford UCF. You're
again.
That's tough. And that's at UCF too.
They're scheduling for success, and then there's Stanford's schedule. credit to them for going down to Orlando, and is that where UCF is? I think they're in Orlando.
Orlando, yeah.
Yeah. Credit to Stanford for not being afraid and going down there and playing them, but man, it's going to be hot. It's going to be humid. They got to go all the way across the country. Their confidence is probably down after getting blasted by USC. Maybe they'll have KJ Costello. Maybe they won't. They won't have their star left tackle. I don't know. The arrow is trending down a little bit for Stanford, I feel like.
For USC, though, they got to go to BYU this week. BYU just beat Tennessee in SEC country. So I think it's unfair to BYU if we say that USC's on upset alert this week. Because if BYU wins, can you say, I didn't see that coming?
Oh, you could definitely see it coming.
I can see it coming a mile away.
I mean, USC should win, but as we've talked about here, BYU's a tough out. They're just a physical team. They play a pro-style offense. They've got older guys. You're dealing with elevation. You're dealing with a freshman quarterback playing on the road for the first time. It's always different and harder, especially for a quarterback, to operate things when you're in a hostile road environment compared to the home crowd, where they'll quiet down when you're up at the line of scrimmage. It's going to be the opposite. So I think that's going to be a really tough game.
Now, Hawaii, they get another Pac-12 opponent this week. They get Washington.
Wait, are they in the Pac-12?
I think they are in the Pac-12. They got Washington this Saturday.
Washington's going to maul them.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to be a very angry Washington team. Hawaii's, the one that has to fly 3,000 miles or however it is. That's going to be a wipeout. It's going to be 56-14.
I agree.
Or something.
All right. Well, we'll talk more Pac-12 football later on in the week.
Good matchups this week.
A lot. I'm really excited for the Pac-12
schedule. Out of conference matchups here in week three.
I'm really excited. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. That's Michael Lev. Make sure you follow all of his content on Tucson.com and the Wildcaster app.
Make sure. So much content, Justin.
And also make sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts. We'll see you next time.